The opinions expressed in this Spirited Sports podcast are individual and are not necessarily representative of Spirit Life or Toronto Metropolitan University. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to the Spirited Sports podcast. From the ovations of the crowd to the tense moments of anticipation, it's safe to say that sports have a special way of bringing people from all walks of life to a united front. On this fun-filled podcast, Nick DeChico, Todd Ashtua, Tully Kaka-Latrice, and many more explore the spirited stories, highs and lows, and triumphs and heartbreaks that makes being a sports fan an emotional roller coaster ride. The Spirited Sports Podcast is the perfect place for sports fans to get the latest sports news, insights, and opinions. Fans are the backbone of the sports industry. Whether we're podcasters, broadcasters, or listeners, our journey to sports fandom has to start somewhere because we're all fans first. This is the Spirited Sports Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Spirited Sports Podcast, episode number 37. Thank you so much for joining us. Nick, Tully, and Nevin with you here for this episode. Really excited for this one. Let's get it underway. Now, something we have to talk about today is we have to talk about the ending of the Four Nations face-off in the NHL. A fantastic tournament that ended last night in Canada's 3-2 victory over the United States. Connor McDavid getting the winning goal in that one in overtime. Such a great tournament overall for all four teams. A great showing of NHL's best on best. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for having me on. I love being here with you guys and being on the podcast, so thanks for that. And when it comes to the tournament, just, man, was it? It was something. Like, from the start to the end, so many big moments, like so many great games. Just what a tournament, man. And this is what the NHL's been needing. Obviously, the All-Star's been, you know, whatever. But to have a tournament like this filled with so much passion, not only from the fans, but from the players as well. Just how much they want, you know, their country to win. And for so long, we haven't had that. We've wasted years of players' primes without them representing their country, and now it's finally back. Overall, just really, really exciting.
I think it was a really good appetizer for the 2026 Olympics. I think the Four Nations face-off delivered beyond my expectations. Really within the first minute of the competition, when a power play unit featuring Connor McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon, Cale Makar, and Sidney Crosby combined for a goal in less than a dozen seconds against Sweden last Wednesday. But the back-to-back rivalry games between Sweden and Finland, followed by the first US-Canada game, were a blast. And for me, perhaps the only disappointment of the tournament was the fact that the USA-Sweden game on Monday night had like zero meaning and was closer to like a glorified exhibition game than I originally thought this tournament would be. But whether it was the fight night in Montreal or amazing game yesterday, which for a second I saw 2010 Olympics flash by my eyes, I still think the 2010 Olympics was probably, you know, maybe had the edge on this tournament. But you know, Canada winning 3-2 with McDavid there scoring put an exclamation point on an overtime session that had been dominated by Jordan Binnington at the other end of the ice.
All right, so in terms of my overall thoughts on this Four Nations tournament, it was great. It was exactly what hockey needed. You know, we needed a break from the All-Star festivities for a little bit. It was getting a little stale. Players weren't really giving it their all in the All-Star games. This tournament, they gave it their all. They represented their country, and they did a fantastic job. And I think all around, in all aspects of this tournament, everybody involved did a fantastic job in putting on quite the show.
Yeah, just to add to that, I think the atmosphere, we got to give credit to the fans that showed up to the arenas. It was just packed. And obviously, Boston was great, but Montreal especially, like, it was just absolutely, like, rammed in there. It was, like, it felt like you were inside the arena from the TV screen. And it's just like, when you don't really see that in normal NHL games, because obviously it's not, you know, this one-time event, you know, I get that. But still, just for the fans, like the dedicated fans that showed up to watch, you know, Canada, U.S., Sweden, Finland, whichever team they were voting for. It just shows how much everybody really cared.
Absolutely. And Nick, why don't you get into the whole Sid the Kid, Sidney Crosby story there with Canada, because it really is a beautiful thing to talk about.
Yeah, Sidney Crosby, the captain of Team Canada, he did a great job in this tournament. You know, he adds another accolade to his robust international resume. You know, he scored the golden goal back in 2010, as you alluded to, Tolly, earlier in the episode. But, you know, you can still make an argument that he's one of the most valuable players in this tournament. You know, Crosby's participation, you know, wasn't questioned because of an injury at the beginning of this tournament, but he found a way to get himself involved. He had 4 assists in the tournament, three of which in the overtime win against Sweden on February 12th. The last was on Mitch Marner's game-winning goal back in the first game of the tournament. And he also scored an empty netter in the victory against Finland on Monday. The Finns rallied after being down 4-0 and scoring 3 goals in the third period. But Canada did end up pulling out the 5-3 victory. 2 goals from Mikael Granlund, who we'll talk about in a bit. But Crosby's 5 points are tied with the U.S.'s defenseman Zach Werenski for the tournament lead. So overall, Crosby has done everything Canada expected and more. His confidence was setting the tone for his team and his country.
For him to be playing at this level, like he's playing best on best at that age. It's just incredible. And that goal, even though it was an empty net, that goal against Finland was so huge because Finland had all the momentum and they nearly came back from a 4-0 lead. I love that.
And if you look too at Sidney Crosby's international resume, quite an illustrious career for Canada. Gold at the 2005 World Juniors, gold at the 2010 Olympics, where he scored that golden goal in overtime against the U.S. in that 3-2 hockey game. 2014 Olympics, gold. 2015 World Championship, gold. 2016 World Cup, Canada won it. And 2025 Four Nations, Canada won it as well. So, Nick, you know, when you hear those successes there at the international level for Sidney Crosby, what comes to mind?
You know, for me, it's, you know, encapsulated with that golden goal back in 2010. That was really his moment to shine. That tournament will forever be in my head whenever I think of international hockey in Canada and goals in overtime. I think that's the one that first pops into my head. But you got to give credit to other players around the team as well. You know, Connor McDavid, you know, he was really, really good in this tournament. You know, he's one of the best players in the NHL. And I said to people that was watching the game with me on last night that, you know, once Crosby retires and Crosby isn't in these tournaments anymore, McDavid is going to almost certainly become the captain of Team Canada when the time comes.
Do you think it was a passing of the torch?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask too.
I think it was of sorts, you know, the golden goal again that we all remember, and then winning this one in such an illustrious fashion over time. I think it was a close passing of the torch, even though, you know, when it comes to the Winter Olympics next year, I think Crosby will still be the captain, maybe. But I do think it was a great passing of the torch moment.
I don't know if you guys heard, but on the it was just kind of like fitting. Chris Cuthbert, when he was right after the goal was scored, he was just like, he said something about it being a big goal for Canada, but this time it's not 87, it's 97. That was just like a cool little line he said. So it's just fitting to have the best player from, you know, that the older generation score in 2010, and then now it's, you know, McDavid from the new generation. I say new generation, but this guy's been in the league for almost 10 years. So it's cool that he finally gets his moment for his national team.
And also shout out to Marner too. I know it was getting a little bit of backlash earlier in the tournament for maybe not being the most you know, noticeable player on the ice, but scored that huge goal against Sweden, and then last night too with that absolutely crucial assist to McDavid. Mitch Marner is it was so refreshing to see him with that Canada jersey on and really show at the international stage too what we've gone used to see with the Leafs, which is Marner being someone who, you know, helps out the team in whether it's scoring or assisting or making big plays. So, Nevin, maybe if you wanted to elaborate there on the Mitch Marner effect.
Yeah, for, you know, most of his career, he's faced so much backlash. And part of that is rightfully so, because he hasn't really stepped up in big moments. Neither have the other Leafs. But I think with Marner, people talk about when, you know, there's not much space to operate, he's not as useful. But I felt like in this game, he created a bunch of space for himself. And, you know, you saw on the Bennett goal, that was all him setting that up. He was probably, honestly, the third most important player for Canada in that game. So, shout out to him. He played awesome. He was vital for that win. I mean, he set up the tying goal and the game-winning goal. Both primary assists. So, you know, you got to give him his flowers. Even though, you know, even though he hasn't played well in the playoff series in the past, mm-hmm. or maybe he won't play well in this year's playoffs. But for that game alone, with so much pressure, he stepped up in a big way. So yeah, shout out to my boy Mitchie.
Switching gears, it is an absolute honor to be able to introduce our special guest, Stephen Lucas. He's a very good friend of mine, as a very nice person. Honored to have him on the podcast. So Stephen, thank you so much for joining us. So the first question here is, why do or don't you think the Leafs will or won't finish first in the Atlantic Division?
This is a great question, because the Atlantic Division title race is a really tight race right now between the Leafs, Lightning, and Panthers. Despite the Leafs' regular season inconsistencies, such as a hot and cold special teams unit like power play and penalty kill, and streaks of minimal scoring, they're just 3 points behind the Panthers for first in the division with games in hand. If the Leafs are able to stay consistent, healthy, and win hockey games down this last stretch, they can win the division. Keys to this are going to be a more consistent power play and penalty kill. A strong power play can change the mood around a team and can be the difference between finishing first and second in a tight division, especially in a high-scoring division like the Atlantic. Another key to a division title will be young players like Nick Robertson, Pontus Holberg, and a bit of an older player like Domi, who will need to take a big step in their development to provide a boost both in terms of depth up and down the lineup to help win games and not rely so heavily on the core four. I also believe if they can make the cap work and add a depth defenseman and top six forward by the trade deadline, there is no reason why the Leafs can't leap the Panthers for first in the division this year.
The second question is, why don't you think William Nylander will or won't win the Rocket Richard Trophy?
There is no doubt William Nylander has so far had a great offensive season with 55 points and 33 of those points being goals in 55 games, putting him second in the league in goals. Now, I don't believe Nylander will win the Rocket Richard Trophy. I say this because you look at who's in first place right now, which is Leon Draisaitl. He has 40 goals and is getting fed pucks from Connor McDavid every night, whether they're playing on the same line or on the power play. Add Draisaitl's ability to create offense for himself, his goals per game average and goal total is very unlikely to slump for the remainder of the regular season. Now, Nylander's goal scoring has come in clusters where he scores 5 goals in 3 games, but then doesn't score for the next 5 to 7 games, resulting in a goals per game average at 0.56. Now, Leon Draisaitl consistently almost scores a game with a goals per game average of 0.73. Now, with the consistency of Draisaitl's scoring, he will win the Rocket Richard over William Nylander.
The third question is, why do or don't you think that Mitch Marner will or won't win the Art Ross Trophy?
Mitch Marner currently sits tied for fourth in this year's Art Ross Trophy race. Do I think Mitch is capable of winning it at least once in his career? Yes. But for this year, he will fall short. Listen, Mitch Marner is an incredible hockey player with elite playmaking abilities, high hockey IQ, and is very reliable defensively. Now, Marner is currently 16 points behind McKinnon for first place in points, which is way too much to overcome, especially when you also have to keep up with Kucherov, Draisaitl, and McDavid, who are all chasing MacKinnon for this year's Art Ross Trophy as well. Another reason why Marner will not win it this year is, under Berube's so-called north-south playing system, we have seen stretches of games where the core four, which includes Marner, has not produced on offense. And when Marner and Matthews is not connecting, Marner does not register points, which you need to do consistently to win the Art Ross Trophy and not drop out of the race. Mitch has also never recorded 100 points or more, which you need to do to win the Art Ross. You could argue COVID shortened seasons took that away from him, but stats are stats. Now, Mitch is currently on pace for 114 points this year, and that still might not be enough to win it. Listen, Mitch is capable of winning it in his career at least once, but very unlikely to win it this year.
The fourth question is, why do or don't you think that Joseph Woll will or won't be the Leafs' starting goalie in the playoffs?
There's no doubt that the Leafs have had some of the best goaltending in the NHL in this regular season between Joseph Woll and Anthony Stolarz. But I do not think Woll will start in Game 1 of the Stanley Cup playoffs for the Toronto Maple Leafs. In the playoffs, as we've seen with the Boston Bruins last postseason, using a tandem does not work, and you need to ride your hot goalie, which ended up being Swayman for them. The Leafs' hot goalie right now is Anthony Stolarz, who before getting injured was number one in the league in goals saved above expectation, topping Shesterkin, Sorokin, and Hellebuck. And currently, Stolarz is first in the league with a .929 save percentage. And as all Leafs fans would say, Stolarz, when playing fully healthy, has stolen wins for the Leafs in the regular season. With Stolarz playing Vezina-caliber hockey, I believe he has the capability of outgoaling another guy like Vasilevsky, Ullmark, or Bobrovsky, who are all potential opposing goalies for the Leafs in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Now, obviously, health is a concern for Stolarz and Woll, but if Stolarz continues his hot play for the Leafs, he will be the starter over Woll for Game 1 of the Stanley Cup playoffs this year.
The fifth and final question is, why do or don't you think that the Maple Leafs will or won't win two rounds in the playoffs?
I think this is a question everyone is wondering about in Leafs Nation. Does this current Leafs team have what it take to make a deep run in this year's Stanley Cup playoffs? Obviously, the Leafs have had their playoff struggles, losing 7 out of their last 8 playoff appearances in the first round, largely because of their offensive firepower disappearing in all those series. Now, for this team in this year, I don't believe this team has what it takes to make a deep run in this year's playoffs because of the lack of depth production and average defensive play. When you pay 4 players 53% of your cap, you're not going to have a team where you can rely on 4 lines and 3 defensive pairings. It's shown time over time it doesn't work. You can't tell me if the core 4 is not producing. A guy like Connor Dewar or David Kampf is going to give you that depth production you need to be successful in the playoffs. Another reason why the Leafs won't be successful is they don't have a number one defensive player who can run a power play unit and has a blast from the point. A big reason why Tampa and Florida have had their playoff success is because they've had a defenseman like Montour and Hedman who can shut it down, provide offense, and run a power play unit, and the Leafs just don't have that. If the Leafs want to have future playoff success, this core four has to be broken up.
Steven, thank you so much for your insightful, informative, and really well-articulated answers. We really, really appreciate it.
Let's take it to the diamond. Baseball. Let's bring in Ben Tedesco. Ben, you have quite some opinions here and some thoughts about the Vladdy situation with baseball and the Blue Jays. Take it away.
So the Toronto Blue Jays are in some deep trouble. They failed to reach an agreement with star slugger Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and it's looking like he'll become a free agent at the end of the season. It's a massive blow to fans, as many were hopeful that a deal could be reached, but it seems like one never came close at all. The Blue Jays organization as a whole is in a very troubling spot. What seemed like an up-and-coming team not even 5 years ago has turned into a team that could be in for a rebuild as early as next season. And Vladdy's not the only free agent the team will have, as star shortstop Bo Bichette is also on track to reach free agency this season, along with former All-Star Chris Bassitt. Plus, Kevin Gausman is a free agent in 2 years, along with Dalton Varsho. I know some people are hopeful extensions will come, especially for Vladdy or Varsho, but I wouldn't be too sure. During Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro's tenure controlling the team, they have issued 2 extensions. One for Randall Grichuk, which the team ended up having to trade because the contract was so bad, and Jose Berrios, who's, let's give him some credit, that was actually a pretty decent contract. But there have been two public offers that Vladdy has spoken of. One was in 2021, where the Jays offered Guerrero a laughable $150 million over 7 years. The second one was closer to the beginning of the offseason at around $340 million. He has stated clearly that he has a number in mind, but is that number reasonable? Well, it may have actually been leaked. We're going to get into some conspiracy stuff now, but hear me out. David Ortiz said that Vladdy is worth $585 million over 13 years. That number and the terms of the contract seem very specific, almost like Ortiz knows something that we don't. If that $585 over 13 years are indeed Guerrero's contract demands, that's a tall ask for a player who can be one of the best hitters in the league, but does not play a premium position and has been very inconsistent throughout his career. It would also sign him until he's 39, and if his prime is anywhere comparable to a future Hall of Famer in Miguel Cabrera, those last 4 to 5 years of the contract when he's in his mid-30s are going to be rough. I could see the Mets and other teams strapped with cash like the Red Sox taking a legit run at Guerrero this offseason, and Vladdy also wouldn't mind playing with players like Juan Soto or Rafi Devers, so that also helps. Both of the clubs mentioned could pay him that money he's looking for, although I feel like he's going to have like an Aaron Judge walk year type season to convince clubs to invest that much in a first baseman. Regardless of what happens though, the Blue Jays should have invested in Vladdy either after 2021 or 2022 instead of just lowballing him and waiting. That strategy could leave them not only losing their face of the franchise, but a ton of fans as well. Back to you, Nick.
Alrighty, Ben. Thank you very much for doing that for us. That was great insight there on the Vladdy situation. Thank you very much. That was a fantastic episode. Big thank you to Stephen, Ben, and Evan here for all your help with this episode today. That was a really good one. We really appreciate you coming on and having a chat with us today. Tolly, as always, buddy, a really good job as always. Great work. Thank you so much for listening to the Spirited Sports Podcast. We will catch you next time.